SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website too, stevebick.com. A balmy minus six this morning when I went out to start the car for Tina. Minus six. Yeah. Well, yeah, there is one, I suppose, gratifying element to this kind of weather. And that is that Eric Guillou is complaining nonstop. I've never seen anybody react to cold the way experiencing his first winter in New York. I don't think he's wearing shorts today. the newly tweeting Guillou. I am getting a kick out of it. It's a new experience for him. The cold weather. Yeah, he said, "How do you people stand this?" It's a fair question, actually. I don't know. I keep coming back to it. I lived in other parts of the country, including the mid-south, Charlotte, but I keep coming back to the Northeast. 10 years in Montreal, and now I've been here longer than I've been almost anywhere, really, other than growing up. And I'm knocking on that door too, because I came here in '99. So it's going to be 20 years. I've been here in the foothills of the Adirondacks, as Jason Blewett has always has said. I haven't heard. Jason hasn't come up with a moniker yet for Gulfstream like that, right? From the shores of the Atlantic Ocean, from from the corner of Hallandale Beach Boulevard and US 1. So I don't know. I haven't heard that yet. You'll hear Jason today though at 11:30. They're going to have the Pegasus draw. They'll be drawing both the big races publicly, and things seem set. Haven't seen any late additions to the turf race, but there probably has been a couple to make that a full field as well. So we'll keep an eye on that, and we'll have Jeremy Plonk at that time doing our countdown to the crown, getting his impressions of the 3-year-old races, and looking ahead to Friday, where we now have opening day at Oaklawn available for perusal. And it's good. It's really good. It's everything we come to expect at Oaklawn. The Smarty Jones, the feature on opening day. There's actually quite a few interesting sidelights to the Oaklawn card, including a pair of divisions of 3-year-old fillies. And there's one thing in particular that's kind of cool that undoubtedly we'll discuss tomorrow with Sid Fernando, because his client and friend Charlie Fipke has got a pair of fillies, one in each division, one for Dallas Stewart, Tale of La Comité, and then one for Steve Asmussen. And that one is Sol Comi Town. It's kind of a goofy, awkward name, but the two of these fillies happen to be out of the sisters, the Perfect Soul sisters of Munnings. And this has been such a prolific family for Mr. Fipke, and it's kind of cool. They're cousins, and out of a pair of sisters, and it would have been wild if they had landed in the same division. I mean, that would have been crazy. Of course, that, you know, would have been an entry, so they kept them apart. But not in every jurisdiction would they be an entry. But keep an eye on this. And then there's another sister of these mayors, Spites Comité, that Linda Rice has with a division at Turfway. You might not have noticed this, but Spites Comité, she debuted as a two-year-old on New Year's Eve at Turfway. She actually comes back this week. She comes back, I think, on Friday. And when she started originally, she kind of caught my eye. It's just funny. This is a big family, certainly Sid very familiar. But the Smarty Jones is the feature, and we're actually going to get a little insight into the likely favorite, or certainly one of the favorites, Gray Attempt. And you know that I couldn't resist having Jinx Fires opening week of the year after the Sugar Bowl win on December 22nd at Fairgrounds. The Great R Colt comes back in this spot, drew the 8-hole. That race producing a couple of players, including Super Steed, who Steve Haskin, and I'm sure we'll go over this on Thursday with Steve. And by the way, today Steve drops Derby Dozen at Blood Horse. But Super Steed comes back in here after the disappointing Even Money flop in that Sugar Bowl. So he's among the many horses that are going to stretch out. Bulldor in here, who was second to Super Steed for Steve Asmussen and the Orrs, Ed and Susie Orr. Speaking of those Comité mares, this is a Munnings colt, 700,000 two-year-old in training, sale purchase last year, won at First Asking and got beat by Super Steed in the slop at Churchill closing weekend. Bulldor, Super Steed, Long Range Toddy, who won the Springboard Mile, starts his three-year-old season in this spot, the Take Charge Indy for Mr. Horton and Asmussen. And, of course, went on a streak after he broke his maiden at Remington, won the Clever Trevor, won the Springboard Mile. And Bankett, the New York bred, who came a-running in the Springboard, his first, not his first start against Open Company, because he debuted against Open Company, but his Open Company stake debut, and he ran very well that day, Bankett. He came flying under Ricardo Santana, and Santana riding Bankett in here. Richard Aramia, who's been aboard for all of Long Range Toddy's wins, rides for Asmussen there. Jimmy DeVito's got For Love of Country for Double Down, the nice $300,000 Sky Mesa, OBS March last year. And in addition to Gray Attempt, Jack Van Berg. And of course, the winner, Breeders' Cup Weekend, at a nice fat price, $30, lit up the board early on the Breeders' Cup Friday card. Tom Van Berg sends out his father's namesake for Muddy Waters in this Smarty Jones. I brought up this in part also because our first topic after the break will be evening attire. And Pat Kelly is going to join us. He's in Florida, actually, Pat, for a few days off. And Sean Bridgemahan, who rode evening attire to his grade one win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. A win that then, you know, so many other big spots along the long career. Evening attire, the news coming yesterday from Akendale, a little downstate, where he had been retired and where he had been living happily for 10-plus years. The wonderful facility, the legacy of John Hettinger, and evening attire passed over the weekend, and the Akendale team put out a Facebook post yesterday that quickly circulated. So many fans. Evening attire by Black Tie Affair and bred by TJ Kelly, Tommy Kelly, and the Grants, Joe Grant, Joe and Mary, as affable and as wonderful. A set of ownership that, and far beyond just the ownership, but as wonderful a family, families that as can come together to own and campaign a racehorse. And Evening Attire, you know, career started in 2000 and did not end until July of 2008. The big gelding, who by the time he started as a gray and by the time he was done, he was Snow White. 69 starts, 15 wins, 16 seconds, 9 thirds for a tick under $3 million in earnings. Always tried, faced the best of not just his generation, because he obviously, when you race for as long as he did, you know, to age 10, you face multiple generations. And it's a who's who. The horses that he beat and that beat him. Names like Mineshaft and Medagliadoro. And so many more. We'll talk to Pat after this break. And then in hour three, starting hour three, Sean Bridgemahan. Bridgemo. It's funny, I had to go to the, I went to the records book, and I first I thought maybe, I said, was it possible that the Jockey Club Gold Cup that day, when he beat Harlan's Holiday and Repent and Milwaukee Brew, I thought, could that have been Bridgemahan's first grade one? The answer was no. It was his first grade one route win. But Sean had already won a pair of Carters. He had won two Carters already before the Jockey Club Gold Cup win. And, of course, ahead of the Gold Cup, Evening Attire had won the Saratoga Breeders' Cup Handicap. And it's funny because he was 10-1, basically, in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And it was a good field, too. I mean, this is, you know, it was a good field, but he really went a little underappreciated. This was the breakthrough win. And Sean was riding him regularly at that point. Robbie Davis had ridden him his first six or seven starts, including his maiden breaker, which came at Saratoga. And then Sean picked him up for an allowance on the turf, actually, at Belmont in the fall of 01, and rode him for about the next dozen or plus starts. Mark Guidry won on him. Cornelio Velasquez had some good mounts with him and good wins. Jose Santos did as well. Edgar and Jose Espinoza, who won the last start of his career in the Greenwood Cup at Philly in 08. We'll talk about Evening Attire next with Pat Kelly. We'll look at yesterday's racing. We'll look ahead to the Friday stakes, including the Interborough with Andy Serling, and much, much more. Pat Kelly next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We were the ones at the docks, helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
It's happy, I'm again. I think I might be happy if I wasn't out with them and I'm happy. It's a lovely place to be. Happy that the fire's full of bomber and it's a deal. With a haircut, smile, and the meaning of style. It's a night out with the boss. But you win or you lose, and it's them who choose. And if you don't win, then you've lost. What a good place to be.
We're back at the races, and as it happens in the course of careers, the conversations we have, particularly, I always reference Shug McGee, as Shug is always stoic at these moments about the loss of a fan favorite, a champion, or any other kind of horse that we talk about. On the occasion of their passings, and the news came from Akindale yesterday afternoon that Evening Attire at 21 is gone. And this is a horse that so many people, particularly in the Northeast, had great affection for because of his longevity. And when you race for 10 years, and you can count on him, you know, turning up at Saratoga and, you know, in certain races and certain occasions, you just, you know, hard not to become a fan of Evening Attire. And we talked many, many times over the last few years of his career with Pat Kelly. And we'll have Pat is joining us now, and Sean Bridgemahan later. Pat, to you and your family, and to Joe and Mary Grant and all of their family and friends, so sad about this, but easy to celebrate what a game and generous horse he was.
He was a fabulous horse. Came at a great time for both my family and Pop and Mr. Grant, who go way back together and started out with real cheap claimers at Suffolk, but ended up, you know, at the top of the rung there with such a wonderful horse over many years. He loved it at the track. Every time we tried to give him a vacation, he got antsy after a month or 6 weeks. And so I'm going to get back to the track. He loved hanging out at the barn. He was such a star, as you know.
Very much. And, you know, you mentioned the way he came along. And we should really start with that because, you know, your father bred him with Joe. And how did that even come to be with the mare, with the dam Conquilor?
The mare was an Argentine mare, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, Pop somehow had a chance on her and got Mr. Grant involved when she went to stud. And we had some other nice horses out of the mare. And in an evening, a tire popped up after being bred to Black Tire Fair. And Pop and Larry and had him as a two-year-old down at Hialeah breaking a long time ago. And then when Hialeah was still open, and they brought him up to New York, and Timmy trained him as a two-year-old, my brother Tim. And there at the end of his two-year-old year, after Sarah told him he got a little chip in his knee or something, and they sent him down to Ocala and did a little minor surgery and gelded him because he had an undefended testicle. It's funny, Robbie Davis rode him early in those races and came back and told my dad, he says, DJ, he says, check this guy's equipment in the back. Something's pinching him. It's amazing how those jocks can do that.
Amazing.
I've had many great jockeys in the past year. It turned out he had an undefended testicle that they took care of at the same time, so that's why he was a gelding. But it made a big difference, and then Timmy retired that next spring to work for Naira. He's top of the scale still, and I got him, and it was just fabulous to bring him along, and we got him. We felt we were going to run him at the end of Saratoga, but we didn't make it, and we had a wonderful fall, and we had all three stakes in a row. It was 3, 10, and 4 over the winter time. Loved Aqueduct, loved Saratoga. Actually, I think the only race he ever won at Belmont was Jockey Club Gold Cup that one year. So he was a two-time specialist for sure.
You talk about that fall, that the fall of 2002. And by now he's 4 years old, and he had actually in the fall of 2001 he went on that string when he won the Discovery and the Queens County and then the Aqueduct Handicap.
I think they've renamed for him now. I'm not sure if they renamed one of those races in his name that we run the evening attire every winter at Aqueduct. So it might have been the old Aqueduct Handicap that they renamed.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. And you beat...
He just got really good, and once he stretched out, and of course you mentioned Sean, who rode him many, many times for us, and they got along so well together, and he just kept surprising us as he got older. I know he loves Saratoga, but they weren't too happy that day. They had the Funny Side Beer giveaway mug day, and he beat the heck out of him, and that's... Saratoga Breeders' Cup. They were giving away, I don't know how many thousand mugs they gave away that day. But he definitely loves Saratoga, and Pop loved coming up to Saratoga to feed him the carrots and sit there, and it just helped Pop hang around a few years longer, I think, thinking about getting up to Saratoga every year to see Saratoga, to see evening.
Absolutely. And, you know, the race that I put up on Twitter earlier, mentioning that you were and Sean were going to visit. You mentioned the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and at that point, you know, you elevated the level of competition. You went to Suffolk, and you competed in the Mass Cap, and just got beat there. Macho Uno beats him a length and change, and he actually had some traffic to deal with. And then the Suburban, E-Dubai and Lido Palace and Macho Uno finish ahead of him. But then came the Saratoga Breeders' Cup Handicap. He pretty much overwhelmed that field. But then the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and you were 10-1. Talk a little bit about going into the Gold Cup and ahead of the Breeders' Cup.
He was just doing so good coming out of Saratoga that fall, and the race kind of set up for him. And he was a funny horse. If you watched a lot of races as I did, when he was into it, he was up there breathing down the neck at the half mile pole and ready to run over top of him. And that was just one of those races where he just really put it all together and came out strong and finished well, and just just to swamp them that day, and it was a heck of a price, that's for sure. And we did try. We didn't have any luck in any of the Breeders' Cups. Those months never did work out for us. But I think the one in Chicago was his best chance, and the track was just a little, that drying out track. It was great for P.T. Johnson with Valpony, one of the bombers of all time. But it just, we caught a kind of a funny track. And he was a little peculiar about his tracks. He, certain ones he loved, as a Saratoga Aqueduct. As much as we tried to win a race with Joe at Boston, Suffolk, it really wasn't a very, he never seemed to really get a hold of that track. We tried that, I don't know how many times, to sneak up there. Joe would have loved to win that, and we would have loved to win it for him, but we just never seemed to be able to pull that one off. But no, he just, and it came back, you know, good, and just was a wonderful horse. We'd give him some vacations, and just even right up to his last race when he set the track record. They were finally bringing back the long race, the marathon at the Breeders' Cup, and then he ended up getting a little ankle injury that finished his career as a racehorse. And the wonderful people at Mr. Hettinger's just did a great job with him. He was the star up there.
You know, it's interesting, too, because there was an extended period basically between the Stymie win in March of 2007, and then he didn't win again until December, but he you know, he really wasn't that competitive for a period. And I know we talked during that period too, Pat, and you weren't concerned, and then he comes back the next year and was very good again, including in graded stakes. But those last three starts, the Fit to Fight, the Brooklyn, and the Greenwood Cup, he was really good. And at that point, he's 10 years old. It's pretty amazing.
No, it was wonderful. And you know, we didn't pick too many easy spots, like I say. We didn't have too many base on balls, yeah. Pretty much all stakes are as good of allowance races. They don't even like those kind of allowance races anymore, some of those things. So he was in a rock and a hard place. He wasn't eligible for very much other than 9 minutes or something in a year or something. So, but he came good. I know he pulled his exercise rider. Danny Blake called me this morning. He's retired now and was the senior white cap for Naira for many years. He worked for my dad, and I adopted him once. Poppington retired, and he galloped him, and when he didn't retire, retired, then he retired. The two of them retired together. He was tired of even the tire stretching his arms out every morning. He just go out there and, you know, gallop on, breathe good. Just all indications were that he was, you know, fine. So we kept plugging along, and it was wonderful to have won his last race, for sure.
That it's a perfect way to go out. One race that I got to bring up, and I had forgotten about, was the DQ in the Clark.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about that.
He should have been over 3 million. Go back and watch that one day. On the head-on, Castellano's leaning over with his elbow out, keeping us from coming by him on the inside. He actually got headed and came back on the inside to get the lead before the wire. It was 30 degrees, speaking of cold. As you were snowing at Churchill. I was there for the week of Thanksgiving. I had won the Cardinal the week before with Risk Averse, and even the tire was there to wait for the Clark. And they put it down. I'm looking at the rerun. I'm going, what are they looking at here? The other guy's leaning over trying to keep us because of the races from Pimlico years ago with your Yokosuka. And they put us down for something. I don't know. We actually thought about, you know, the appeal it or whatever, but that was a tough one, and he didn't do anything wrong. The wind was blowing 40 miles an hour. He just dug in and got back up and run by head. And as far as I'm concerned, he should have left him up. But that was a tough one. That would have got him over the 3 million. I think he just missed the 3 million. Anyway.
Exactly, and there certainly were other. I mean, you think about that. He fell what, 23,000 short, so yeah. it wouldn't have taken too many more noses.
Could have been on his way to 4 million. You know, anyway, he's one of the wonderful horses I've had the pleasure of being around in my long career. him and Risk Averse carry that through the last 20 years. It's been a down, down. So it's been a wonderful thing. It's been a great place now, and people can stop by and visit his graveyard, Mr. Hettinger, for sure.
Well, one thing I want to ask you, when you have a horse that lasts this long, Pat, what's the key to the longevity in your mind? And how much of it is just, the somewhat random makeup of the breeding and how much of it is the...
In his case, I think he just loved what he did. Like I said, he to the day he retired, and he dragged Danny around there every morning. He just loved what he did. Had the physical makeup for it. Hardly, other than the problem as a baby, had never really had any kind of surgeries or medical issues. And that was just a minor little tip thing to start with. So I think we took some x-rays of him when he was 7 or 8 years old, and the vet couldn't say, wait a minute. This horse has run a bunch of times. His x-rays are just unbelievably good. So, thank the Lord that he stayed sound. He was a nice moving horse. He didn't do anything, strange. And it's just a pleasure to be around a horse like that, and you're thrilled to get a couple of those in your career.
Well, we always hear and we discuss, the wear and tear on a horse, and certainly even young horses start to get arthritic. Did he have to warm himself up? Did he need a
Too much. No, I was saying he was lucky enough to with Pops and Timmy did early on. I mean, that's what I learned. If you give a young horse a chance and don't push too hard, they'll get a chance to prove how good they are if they're a nice horse. And it's the number one thing I've always said to Pop Colas is patience. Give them a chance. And if they, most horses don't really set till they're two and a half years old anyway. So that if you can get through the early stages, it helps you with longevity. I noticed I was looking at the charts. I actually ran him and Naughty New Yorker together once with an entry. Naughty beat him. He was fourth. Naughty was second. But, Naughty made it till he was seven. The whole man went off the stud. So maybe it's just the old school style of training. Who knows? But you have to have some good material to work with.
No doubt. Well, you go through the list and you go through those races. I mentioned before you joined us all the names.
I didn't put too many easy spots for him.
No. Well, including that Jockey Club Gold Cup, because he just look at that field: Lido Palace, Harlan's Holiday, Repent was the favorite, and really didn't fire. He did not run well, and
Lido Palace was in there too, right?
Yeah, Lido Palace was second, what's notable about watching that Jockey Club Gold Cup, Durkin points out immediately that he kind of broke awkwardly and stumbled a little bit and finds himself completely at the back of the field. They didn't go particularly fast immediately, so he didn't have to come from too far back. But we'll talk to Sean Bridgemahan later. Sean was very patient and let him just basically get his feet under him and start to move at will.
Sean knew him wonderful. And it's funny because if you look, he stopped hesitating. And if you're over back to what Robbie said early on, if that thing was pinching him, it always took him a couple of strides to get going. And it's funny. There's a bunch of races where he'd give him a head start. But sometimes it mattered, sometimes it didn't. But that was, if there was any one little quirky thing about him, he just kind of hopped out of the gate all the time. But he dragged Sean up there, and I think he just, as I say, Tom's call was wonderful. He just kept on moving away from him in the stretch. He swamped him.
Now, some of the names, he did run in the Hopeful as a 2-year-old, and that was, of course, the City Zip, Yanaguska, Dead Heat. And then later on, you know, he faced off, we mentioned Macho Uno and, well, obviously Volpone in that Breeders' Cup and that crew, but Mineshaft, Medagliadoro, Pleasantly Perfect in the other Breeders' Cup when you went out to California.
Yeah,
Thunder Blitz.
I don't think he liked California either. He wasn't happy camper out there. I don't know. Didn't like that. That was one of those smoky ones, too. We had smoke and the fires and it was hot. And, I don't know. Maybe just a cold weather guy. Like the Northeast.
That's true. And you know what? You look at the wins, December, March, November. Then there was, well, Saratoga,
exactly.
Of course.
Yeah. Well,
November, January.
That's the best in Saratoga. He was a true two-turn horse. I mean, that's just hardly any of them anymore. They can't get away from our anybody anymore. But a few of them loved that long distance, and he was one of them.
Well, funny side, that was a great ride. I remember that race, the Excelsior, which might have been Funny Side's, I don't know if it was his last, might have been his last graded stake win. Beat him a half length that day. Midway Road, Southern Image, Awfully Wild, Host. Oh my gosh, in the Knickerbocker. You know, those it really deserve some credit too, because you weren't afraid to run him on the grass, and he was okay on the grass.
That wasn't an off-the-turf one, though, was it?
I think no.
A couple of, no, okay. We actually tried him, right, okay. We did try him. Well, originally, I think the first time I ran him on the grass. He might like the grass before we started the run. If I can remember that, before we actually tried the personal allowance race just to get him back in action.
And in October. In October.
He ran okay, but Sean came back and, Turf didn't help him that much, which was good because he went ahead and took a shot at the Discovery, which is the last of the
That's right.
So two old races every fall. So it gives you a chance to not have to deal with the older fella. But it wasn't an easy one with Street Cry.
Well, and he beat Street Cry and Free of Love. He was 65-1 that day, Pat.
Well, he was eligible for one other run.
That's right. That's true.
Everybody thought we were nuts. But what are you doing in that? I think it was a 6-horse field. Anyway, nobody won the run. Maybe even Eddie Dubois was in there. Okay. It was a tough spot. But he just got that 2-turn thing, and wow.
Paid
100. He paid that tremendous. I didn't have a dime on him.
He paid $133, and we'll have to ask Joe Grant about that. Joe, because Joe must have put a little something in, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Joe wasn't afraid of it. He's actually traveling today, so he's tracking down tomorrow. I think he said himself.
I will.
A little visit. He called me yesterday morning to let me know, and I think he's heading down this way. I'm in Florida for a couple of days. So.
Nice. Well, and that part of it.
Coming up on our 40th anniversary next year. We took a little trip this year to come down home here.
You know, we got to talk about Joe and Mary and how much fun, you know, it was for them. And, you know, we think about the parties in their backyard during those years, Pat, that were so much fun, and the lobster boil. And, you know, there was a real atmosphere that went, you know, with evening attire. And, you know, he was the engine on the party train.
You ain't kidding. He was wonderful, and actually Joe's doing much better now. He had some health issues a couple of years ago, but he's got ascended in a couple of pies with a couple of horses with Contessa. I think he won the race up at Saratoga last year or something he was able to jump into. So he loved it, and I'm sure if you get a chance to talk to him, you'll have a great conversation.
Well, as I mentioned, Sean Bridgemahan's going to join us, and Sean's got the hat full of live horses. He's going to be at Oaklawn on Friday for Jinx Fires, and then he goes to Gulfstream on Saturday for Tom's de Tot and the Pegasus, and he's got a couple of nice horses. Neil Howard, that maiden we talked about the other day, Desert Ride, and we'll also ask him about Owendale, too, for Brad Cox. So Sean will talk about latching on. You know, it's funny because Pat, I thought for a minute that, and I looked it up, because I wondered if this, if that Jockey Club Gold Cup might have been the first grade one for Sean, but it wasn't. He had won back-to-back Carters, including Peeping Tom for Patty, or Pat Reynolds. So it was his third grade one.
He loved him. We all loved him, and he made a decision to head off, and he's doing great, you know, in his career now that he's a father and a family man. I'm so happy for him. I actually ran into him at Saratoga at the Horseshoe, grabbing lunch on the first day up there last. He came wandering in and sat there and had a quick lunch and an adult beverage and talked about the about all the good old days. So it's a wonderful relationship we've had over the years.
You know, it's notable, and it just occurred to me, you know, talking about the mounts that he's got coming up, but this is not, you know, really all that long ago, 2002 to 2008, and yet only he and Edgar among the riders that had mounts for you on evening attire. They're the only ones that are still active. Jose Espinoza, Cornelio Velasquez, Ramon Dominguez.
Ron Guidry had a good little streak with him.
Absolutely. Mark Guidry had three mounts and got a win. Who else is missing? Oh, no, Johnny. Johnny rode him once. Johnny rode him in the Classic.
Right. We rode him with the California one?
Maybe. Yes.
Poor Johnny. You got to ride him when it's one of those ones. And you know right away when he isn't his track. That was his only quirk. But if he was on it, he'd be up there at the far turn, dragging him along. And if he wasn't, he'd be having a lot of work to do.
Well, there's it's funny. There's a few little isolated rider experiences that are kind of interesting. Chris Amey, you used Chris Amey in the race at Hawthorne in the old National Jockey Club handicap.
Right, I think it was a big weekend at home, and nobody could travel, so we went and used the local.
Absolutely, and Alan Garcia rode him once in the Wagon Limit. Ramon, I mentioned, rode him once, second in the Aqueduct Handicap. But it was Jose Espinoza in that last start, the successful run, not just successful, but a record setter. What a great way to go out, Pat, for evening attire.
He'll be missed, and he's got tremendous fan base out there. And like you say, Barbara Livingston and all the photographer gangs at Saratoga, they all love him. And everybody, he was like a New York Red that wasn't a New York Red.
that's a great way to put it.
He thought he was a New York Red, but he'd probably made a lot more money. But I was lucky, as I say, to have him and Marty New Yorker and Mr. Bush. It was quite a wonderful time.
Well, Pat, I appreciate this, and all the people that came along with him as his long career unfolded, that became big evening attire fans. Thanks so much, and we appreciate. You know, always sad, but at the same time, it helps you, you know, appreciate. You know what latching on to a horse is about, and you know, having a career that long, you know.
He had a wonderful retirement, and there's just a wonderful facility there. People need to support them for what we do. It's one of our big things that we do nowadays for the horse retirement, second careers, and you know, Rick Violet, a wonderful first president of TAS, started Take Two and all these wonderful programs that we're so proud of, and gives us a chance to get horses off the tracks when we need to, and get a second career and or retirement. So anything people can do to help with all those programs is appreciated by all of us in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And Akindale, which does have, you know, the the legacy of John Hettinger behind it, but certainly, you know, one of the really highly respected.
He had great foresight to do that. You know, he had a program, if you're familiar, but any horse he bred, if he wanted to send it home, he would take it. He always took one back for retirement. So,
absolutely.
He was just instrumental in that whole area of the industry to get it going and what it's doing now around the country, different racing jurisdictions all are supporting it and funding it and doing what they can to get everybody a good home.
Absolute. And you can follow Akindale on Twitter and visit their site. And of course, Kathleen Fearon and the staff up there that is really committed. And Akindale, just an exemplary, before it became fashionable, Akindale was doing it. Right? Very much.
Yes. And great foresight, and I think he was with David Tipton maybe when he started that. He was a big supporter of David Tipton and got that going. So it's a wonderful legacy for both him and have good old Lee McIntyre.
Absolutely. Well, Pat, enjoy the time off, and we'll look forward to seeing you in New York, seeing you at Aqueduct over the winter. I appreciate it.
Yep, I'll be back in a couple of days, just a couple of days to sneak down with the show.
Absolutely. Nice.
All right.
Thanks, Pat. Pat Any Kelly, time, everybody. Please. You got it. We'll talk later to Sean Bridgman, and we'll get Sean's. I was sad myself to break the news to Sean. Sean had not heard this morning when I reached out to him. He had not heard that evening attire had passed. We'll take a break here, come back, and talk to Jerry O'Dwyer. And, of course, O'Dwyer in the spotlight over the weekend. The performance of Need Supervision in the Silver Bullet Day. Joe Rocco Jr. And for the team behind Need Supervision, first step toward the Fairgrounds Oaks. We'll talk to Jerry O'Dwyer about a big stake win and a big horse, giving him some time in the spotlight. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit the mall at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Listos.
Back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Golden brown, texture like sun, lays me down in my mind. She runs throughout the night, no need to fight, never a frown with golden brown.
We're back at the races, about 15 to the top. Andy Serling is going to join us from New York, of course, and right now joining us, Jerry O'Dwyer. And Jerry sent out neat supervision for a pretty elite ownership group that is come together behind this filly. And the Silver Bullet Day, high-profile win because the Fairgrounds Oaks trail has been so productive. And this was a pretty impressive performance. And for O'Dwyer, it's a bit of a breakthrough. I've been training in the U.S. really full time. What, about 3 years, Jerry, right?
Yeah, that's about it, Steve. I've had a license for about 5 years, but I've just been dabbling in a couple that I owned it myself. And it was like 2 years ago, I just I had a couple of horses, and we said we're going to go at it, go to a full-time commit to training, and we felt we had enough experience under our belt and work for some good people. So we took a stab at it, and thank God it's been working out. We've been climbing with 17 winners last year and 10 winners the year before, so nice steady progression, and we seem to have come across a couple of nice fillies this year.
Well, and this one in particular, and we can focus on this, then we'll talk about, you know, what else has gone into, you know, getting established, but need supervision. Obviously caught the attention of some people, because talk about, you know, the way in which you ended up, you know, attracting a kind of a glittering array of owners.
Well, performance does that. It was solely the filly on her performance. I bought her into Monium there last year at a two-year-old in training sale. I always liked her from day one. But as you know, we like a lot of them, but not many of them progress as much as she has. And she really has. And, you know, she's never run a bad race. Even the first time out, she kind of did everything wrong and still only got beat half a length. She broke a bit slow and she rushed up. She blew the turn a little, and she just got nabbed. And second time out, then she knew what it was all about, and she battled on to beat what looked to be a nice filly of Graham Motion, who's after coming back and winning the other end of Laurel. So I was quite high in the filly, so I was quite keen to take a stab at you know, some tough competition to see where we go. So I went down there for that two-year-old weekend below at Churchill, and we picked out that spot for her, an allowance, optional allowance. For two-year-old fillies on the one turn mile, and you know, she did exceed my expectations. You know, you can think you've got a nice one and hope to do what she did, but you don't really expect them going down to Kentucky taking on a bunch of blue bloods. But she did that. And, you know, and at the phone, as soon as she crossed the wire, I was a very popular guy. There was a lot of people had my number and knew my name that wouldn't have seen me before that. So, she's, you know, she's been great for me. You know, she's highlighted, I think, that we can, you know, that we can do the job in a professional manner and get them there from race to race. So, I've had a bit of business with Don Brower, who's actually the agent that I ended up dealing with for Gary Barber and Adam Wachtel. I had dealings with him before, and with a good business relationship, so he called me as well as many others, and you know, they were the ones that were willing to buy her and leave her with me and give me a chance. So that was a big incentive for me selling her to them instead of other people. You know, the willingness to give me a chance to prove that we can do the job.
Al, and Gary, yesterday, you know, had a visit with Mark Cassie, you know, to talk about War of Will, who, you know, wins half an hour after you. And, you know, Gary Barber, you know, Gary's been on with us as well, and maybe a little more high profile than Adam Wachtel, but Gary, the perfect guy. I mean, perfect example, too. Yesterday, Chris Engelhart was on with us, and Chris got his first graded stake win of his long training career with Solid Wager on Saturday as well. And the opportunity.
Bargain, yeah. That was wonderful.
And that was, you really, it comes at a great time for you, because I know from our friend Smoking Joe McKay, Joe has been, well before this win, Joe has talked glowingly that he thinks you're a terrific horseman, and is involved with some, you know, some of, you mentioned those claimers that you've been winning with, and you know, you had endorsements from very savvy people before this.
Yes. No, I appreciate that. You know, Joe has been a good guy to me, and he's been trying to hustle people into my barn, and you know, but at the end of the day, you know, it takes a nice horse to come along and get you noticed, and that's what we all do it for, you know. I go to the sales, they're long days and they're hard on you, but I enjoy it, you know, and I love going to all the sales, the yearling sales, two-year-old sales, and, you know, I've been lucky. I think about, like, four fillies last year, and three of them won maiden special weights, and this one has been, you know, coming on to be a lot more than we anticipated, you know, from our $55,000 price tag. But it's just great to have the likes of, you know, Adam Wachtel, Gary Barber, and Saul Coombe all involved, you know, and, you know, it's so nice, and I'll, you know, send them all an email of her update, how she's doing. They'll all get back to you. They're all very keen and, you know, all first on the phone or email to congratulate you and, you know, tell you how much of a good job you've done. You know, that means a lot. It does mean a lot, you know. It gives you a lot of confidence in yourself, and, you know, I can have all the confidence in the world in myself, but if other people don't have it in you either, you don't get anywhere. So it's a two-way street.
Very much. A couple of different notes. What is the plan here going forward? I mean, obviously you win at New Orleans, and there's the natural progression with the Rachel Alexandra and the Fairgrounds Oaks. You're based at Laurel, and how do you plan the rest of the winter and spring with her?
Well, so a preliminary plan was if she'd run good, run well in the Silver Bullet Day, we're going to keep her down here, and we are. So she's staying down here now, and she's come out of the race very well, and we're going to give her a break from the traveling. She's raced at four different tracks in her four career starts, so she's been on the road pretty much all her career. So it'll be nice to, you know, just train us at a base where she can run off of. So we're going to keep her here and aim for the Rachel Alexandria, and I'm actually going to bring a couple more here that turf horses, so we'll have like three or four to play with here as well as her.
Excellent. That's terrific. Well, and you know, Joe Rocco, nice for Joe to latch on to her, and of course you rode Joe at Churchill, so it feels like he's going where she's going.
For sure. And Joe is a wonderful rider. He really is. He always has been, but it's like trainers and jockeys were all the same. Unless you've got a good horse to bring you along, you know, you're not in the limelight. And Joe's done a fabulous job on her. You know, anything, you don't have to give him any instructions. We just discuss about the filly before Churchill, and he just gave her the perfect ride, and the same again down here at the Fairgrounds, you know. And he's one of those good jockeys. If things aren't going right, he can improvise to do what's right for the horse throughout the race. And you can't ask for any more than that.
Well, she looked in control, and the stretch out, you wouldn't think, you know, she is out of a Carson City mare, but Painter, part of this equation, too, on the top end, and she travels like a horse that that is going to stretch out.
Yeah, she does, and like from day one, she always has. I had another nice filly that had been working together with Olive Cash, and she's like more of a sprinter type, but with a lot of speed, but... you know, she can, this filly can easily work with her, and you know, you can just see the way the difference in the gallop out. Just needs supervision, just like really, really just wants to keep going and going and going. Like, there's no, I haven't got to the bottom of her anyway, anytime, and I hopefully won't get there anytime soon either.
This was impressive, and technically, yeah, the first two-turn opportunity for her. She went the one-turn mile at Churchill. And, of course, you know, one of the things that you do have in your back pocket, if she continues to, you know, move along, the fact that you've got that win over Churchill, not just at Churchill, but over the wet track circumstance, too, that closing weekend, that's a pretty nice feather to... You know, to know that, you know, she's already been there and that she got over that track well. So there's a lot to be excited about, Jerry. I'm really delighted for you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Not at all. I want to quickly get in a couple of notes, too. You know, you talked about some of the people you worked for. You came over how long ago? About 7 or 8 years ago?
7 or 8 years ago, yeah. And I first landed and I was galloping for Alice Dowell. David Hanley, who's general manager of Windstar now.
Sure.
I was very friendly with him. I was the first job I had in racing, David was. And, you know, I told him I wanted to do something. I just didn't want to go be galloping. I wanted to move forward. And he was the one, he got me in with in Ocala. He was a very good two-year-old consigner, you know. So it was great to learn how to get the young horses going from the bottom up, and get them to progress along and bring them along. And I really enjoyed that, and I was very good at that. So that was good. And then I worked for Michael Matz, and I was assistant to Andrew McKeever. And you know, I galloped for Owen Harty, won Saratoga, which was enjoyable. Got up there to see that as well. George Weaver, galloped for him years and years ago when I just came over for a winter holiday, working holiday basically. Bill Maud, I spent like a couple of months with him, pacing. So I've been very fortunate to be around plenty of good horses and plenty of good trainers, and not to mention plenty of good horses. So I'm confident in my ability to know a good one with a monitor around it, after being around so many.
Absolutely.
Really, America has been wonderful to me, you know.
That's great. Very excited whenever you know, these opportunities arise. I'd love reaching out and you know, getting visits like this in. And you've got some wonderful people behind you, and obviously your own education with those kinds of people, and you know, the ability to pick out, you know, $55,000 two-year-old in training purchase, and you know, you make her into a stake winner, and there's obviously big things ahead yet. So Jerry, congratulations and continued success. I look forward to seeing you down there. I'm going to be in town for Risen Star Week. It'll be a lot of fun.
Great. Well, it'll be good to hopefully meet up with you then, Stephen. Thanks very much for the call and the interview.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Jerry O'Dwyer, everybody. And you can follow Jerry on Twitter, too. My first tweet the other day when we noted the performance and so forth, I didn't. Jeremiah is his you know, given name.
Given name, yeah.
Yeah, but we go under Jerry O'Dwyer 1 on Twitter if you want to follow, Jerry. Excellent.
Great.
Jerry, good. Good luck. We'll see you soon.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have a great day.
You too, Jerry O'Dwyer. There you go. I love it. Yeah. You know, he mentioned Windstar, and I had a note I wanted to slip in. Windstar has brought on Terry Arnold, Rusty's brother Terry, who's done a number of different things and has got a long resume of training and farm management experience. Windstar added him to their roster. He's going to run the rehab operation, and I hate the term breaking, but they're calling him the breaking manager, starting of the young horses. So Terry Arnold at Windstar. Nice. Take a time out here. Andy Serling is going to join us next. I mentioned Sean Bridgemahan later, and Jeremy Plonk. We'll get Plonker in, do some countdown to the crown, and we'll watch with interest as the field assembles. We'll see who gets burdened with the 9, 10, 11, 12 in the Pegasus. Who's paying for the privilege? Back after this, Andy Serling.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.